I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Miracle Voices. This is your co-host, Matt McCabe. I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. I am giving advance warning that I'm in between internet companies. So okay. I'm hoping I don't get disconnected, but
they're fighting over you. Like, I want Tam. No, I want Tam.
Yeah, but they're not paying attention to whom I want. Yeah. So anyway, but I'm well.
Good.
So glad to have this particular guest.
Me too. Welcome to Kirsten Buxton, our guest today. Kirsten, how are you doing?
Oh, thank you so much. I'm doing very well. It's so good to be here with you both.
You too. Are you ever not doing well?
No. Yeah. I don't think I'm ever not doing well.
Yeah. Good one.
And where in the world are you sitting right now? Let's get a sense of geography where Kirsten's at.
I am sitting in a house that is pretty close to Lake Chapala in Mexico.
Close enough to see?
Close enough to see. If I walked around to the other side of the house, I could see the lake.
Oh, beautiful.
Yes.
That's great. Well, Kirsten, you've been in the Course community for a while now. I'd love to hear the backstory of how A Course in Miracles came into your life.
Sure. It was in 2004, and Jesus had already come in very strongly, actually, in a meditation, and had told me he would be my guide. And then once I realized that he was my guide, I tuned into him and paid attention to his directions. And I was going through a deep healing at the time, recovering from a head injury, brain damage from an accident I'd had. And he guided me to go and move in with my parents. And my mother was, of course, a miracle student. She'd been studying it for 2 years with her group. And she put the book in front of me. And initially, when she talked about it, I didn't resonate with the Christian language or symbols. I hadn't had any connection really with them at all in my life. But this time I stopped and prayed and asked Jesus, and he said, yes, open the book. So I opened the book, and the paragraph that I read blew my mind. And that was it. I was his, and the course was my lifelong path. I was convinced within one paragraph.
Yeah. Do you remember the passage that blew your mind?
Oh, I do. I do. To paraphrase it, it's in chapter 12, and it's the investment in reality, where he's talking about how all the antagonism is really within your own mind, but it's projected out. And he said, within this one paragraph that I read, you have no control over the world you made, for it is made out of what you do not want. And he's basically saying in that paragraph that it's impossible to have a will that is separate from God's or different to God's, and yet you think you do. And because of that, the everything of the world is what you do not want, and then you're trying to control it. And so in that moment, I was suddenly, my whole mind was turned around to realizing that I was to stop trying to control anything outside of myself and to start bringing my thoughts and everything back inward, you know, to where I could have control, the only place I could have control over the direction of thinking.
And how was that process of relinquishing control? Like, was there a lot of struggles along the way, or was it just come all at once?
Oh, well, that's, I feel that's the whole journey, isn't it, Matt? It's a constant sort of seeing where there's the belief in personal responsibility or having control, and just noticing it and being able to come back to say, be you in charge, Holy Spirit, or here, please guide me. But yeah, at the time I had headaches and migraines from the head injury. And so everything that was noisy, like lawnmowers and dogs barking and children bouncing balls, you know, anything vibrationally, was painful. So in my mind, I was wanting to just shut everything out or stop, you know, what I perceived as being painful. And then after this paragraph, even airplanes, they would circle over the house, and I could hear them coming a mile away because I was very tuned in to what I did not want and what I wanted to control. So I could hear them coming, and then I heard them get louder and louder and circle over the house and then disappear again. And then after reading this, I realized, wow, I'm paying attention to what I do not want and what I have no control over. And I started just giving the thoughts over to the Spirit. And then it was so miraculous that within a week of this practice, the plane stopped flying over the house. So it was just one miracle after another. It felt like one forgiveness opportunity after another to experience the miracle and experience, you know, the truth of that it's really all my mind. And then, yeah, it's just continued. Like, it feels like every day, just an attention to the mind, paying attention even to the subtlest thoughts, if they arise, that things could be different, or, yeah, to really just keep coming to peace.
So your mom, she introduced you to A Course in Miracles. You have this head injury. You're in New Zealand at this point. Which city in New Zealand were you in?
Near Auckland. Which is okay. In the North Island, yeah.
Okay. And then what happened? How did you find your way to the States?
Well, I started joining with her Course in Miracles group once a week. And it was so beautiful, guys. They would come together and cry over the course every week. They were so precious. They would read it and feel God's love and weep and look at each other. And they just felt so blessed. And so I went, and I was still very exhausted. I had chronic fatigue, but I would just lay down and listen in another room. I'd go in the bedroom next door and just listen. And feel it just washing my mind. Like, I could feel just the presence of the purpose, you know, of the course group and the healing and the love, washing my mind. And after 6 months, they reached a point, by then they'd been together for 2.5 years. They reached a point where they felt that they'd gone as far as they could, and they needed someone further along, more advanced teacher, who was really living it to come. So they invited David Hofmeister to come to New Zealand. He was actually going to Australia at the time. And so they reached out and said, please come to New Zealand. And so I, after 6 months, I was feeling better, and I thought, oh, I don't need to meet this David Hofmeister Course in Miracles teacher. You know, I just want to get back to my life. And so I drove back down to the South Island and was in hoping to just get back into some semblance of a normal life. And meanwhile, David flew in. They were having amazing gatherings with him, and there was a retreat planned. And I called my mother, and I said, how's it going with David there? And she said, oh, it's wonderful. We're having all of these retreats, all of these gatherings, and there's a retreat coming up. And then a male voice spoke through her and said, you need to be here, kid. And I was like, what? that's weird. Why would she? I just had driven for about 7 days all the way to the South Island. It took me so long because I still had chronic fatigue. And I thought, okay, I need to pay attention. That's not random. So I looked at flights. I thought, oh my God, this is wild. I'll just leave it for now. I woke up in the morning, checked the same flights. They'd gone down in price. Thought, okay, that never happens. That's a sign. So I booked a flight and went back up, and a space opened up to be in the house for the retreat. And then people over that weekend came up to me. The first one said, Kirsten, I heard you're going to the Peace House with David. And I said, no. And then the second person, Kirsten, I heard you're going to America. I said, no. The third person, Kirsten, I heard you're going to the Peace House. I said, no, but I'm open. The fourth person, Kirsten, I heard you're going. I said, oh my God, I need to go and talk to David about this. So I said to David, and he'd been talking about the Peace House and how he was, you know, running the ministry there. And it was just him and two cats because his secretary had moved on. And I said to him, would it be possible if I came over and volunteered? And he said, oh, yes, that would be great. I could really do with the support. So Jesus moved really fast. I'd been into the course for 6 months. David came to New Zealand. I was scooped up to go and meet him. And basically within 6 weeks, I'd packed up my life and was on a plane over to Cincinnati, pretending to myself or admitting to myself that I was just going there for 3 months, because it was far too scary to admit that I knew deep in my soul that this was actually far bigger than this, than that. It was, yeah, a life calling.
Wow. That is the injury that you sustained, the brain injury. It kind of has like a Louise Hay feel to it. Like it's kind of thrown in there to stop you from whatever you were doing, living your life, to look at it from a different angle and start maybe a new trajectory. Is that how you look at it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. At the time, it was devastating. Of course, my whole self-concept was, you know, I loved my job. I felt very responsible for my work. And I was so busy, you know, being this active in my life, and I was completely flatlined. And but if I really look closely at it, which I did later, of course, I was unsettled, and I was praying for help and praying to stop, and I actually didn't know how to stop. And I remember even the day the accident happened, I was out on a mountain bike, and I remember the thought going through my mind, I don't want to be here. You know, the death wish almost coming up. I don't want to be here anymore. But it was also my soul. Like, I don't know what else there is. And I don't know what else is possible. And then boom, I was just completely stopped. And then the paraprofessionals were trying to help rehabilitate me, you know, back into a normal life in some way. And I could just feel like, no, there's something else. I don't know what it is. But anything I could come up with of just reinventing myself again, I just felt I couldn't do it. So I was wide open, yeah, to being shown.
Did you fall or did someone hit you or what happened?
I was on a mountain bike and I fell. I fell over the handlebars, and it was unbelievable, Tam. It was as if it was in slow motion. As if I was just in slow motion and going so slowly. And then both wrists were broken and I was knocked out. But it was almost gentle. That probably sounds a bit strange, but it actually was very like a soft landing. That kind of break almost didn't match with what happened.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting that it's your wrists too. It is like stop doing what you're doing, these wrists, do something else. Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. And so you get these messages to go over to the Peace House. You and David talk about it, and then you venture over to Cincinnati. And what progressed then?
Oh, yeah. Just, I found my calling. I think the prayer that I'd had in my heart was for so long, probably since forever, you know, before this lifetime, was I want to go home. And yet I couldn't settle. I couldn't find it in this world. And, you know, New Zealand's a wonderful place, you know, and I love my family. I love the job. But then I want to go traveling. I'd always want to be elsewhere, you know, feeling. And then I felt like I couldn't have all the pieces together in one place to feel like I could be at home and really commit, you know, to being here. And there was something in me longing for that. And then just being around David, I witnessed him in the flow of the Holy Spirit's purpose, serving God. And it looked how it looked. You know, he would flow from a counseling call to checking the mail to we'd go out and get some groceries. We'd make a meal, look after, watch a movie. And he had a lot that he was doing, but he was in this state of grace, you know, just the Holy Spirit doing through him. So this presence of peace was palpable. And I felt that I really had nothing to offer. I felt, you know, pretty slow in my mind and tired with chronic fatigue. But I thought, okay, well, I can at least help with a few things. I can feed the cats, I can make tea. And every time I joined in the simplest ways, I felt that peace. I felt that inner contentment of serving God, of serving not a person, not a ministry, not a job. I wasn't doing like I'd done my whole life, because I believed something outside of myself needed my help personally. It was different. It was, no, this is Spirit doing it through me. And I felt at home. I finally felt at home in this purpose of service. And then just knowing that meditation and being with the Course and practicing forgiveness and then service, that was everything. Within that, I was so at home. And then, the path has just looked how it looked. We went on travels for weeks at a time and then months at a time. We had these incredible miracles with me getting I had a three-month visa waiver, and then there was just a miracle. I got another three-month visa waiver to stay in the country, and then I was able to get a religious visa. So Jesus just kept showing us the way for my staying, you know, with David and the calling and the ministry to just keep being extended. And then it's just, organically unfolded, you know, since then.
Yeah, that's...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, yeah.
I was just curious, what was your job that you loved before all of this?
I was with children. So yeah. I was a early childhood teacher, kindergarten teacher, and then special education.
Yeah, and you have, when you get those like visa renewals out of the blue or something unexpected, you're starting to really, is that really just building your trust, would you say? Or you're like, hey, I wasn't wrong about this. I am following some guidance and things seem to be happening without my effort. What were your thoughts as that stuff started to happen?
Oh, you just nailed it, man. That's it. It was the convincing job that I needed. You know, when Jesus says you need to be convinced through many, many miracles. And I did. It just feels, you know what it's like on this journey. It's like, oh my God, you just asked to serve more and more and more. And there's the ego is so frightened of letting go of everything, you know, and completely saying yes, you know, to a will that's unfamiliar. So I had these amazing visa miracles that convinced me beyond the shadow of a doubt that this was Jesus's plan. This was God's will. And it was so far beyond my own control. I almost messed it up twice. and he just showed me that this was definitely it.
And what do you mean you almost messed it up twice?
Well, the first one, I'd been in the States for 6 months. I had one visa waiver and then followed by another. And then I went back to New Zealand. And we have the Foundation for the Awakening Mind, a nonprofit organization that owns the Peace House in Cincinnati. And we applied for a religious visa for me to come back into the States. And it would give me about 3 years and then renewable for another 2 years. So I went back to New Zealand and I was there for some time. And my appointment was on a Monday morning. And the appointment was at 10 o'clock in the morning, which meant facing the Monday morning rush hour traffic, you know, which in most cities is epic. So that morning, Jackie, my mother, you know, who was A Course in Miracles student, was going to go with me. I don't know how it happened, but my alarm didn't go off. And somehow hers didn't either. And so we were late. We'd planned to leave 3 hours early, you know, to be ahead of the traffic, get there and have a coffee. We woke up late and it was just in my mind, like panic, like, oh my God, I've totally blown God's plan. And what have I done? And we got in the car. She was about to drive. We were like, stop. We need to pray. We need to give this over to Jesus. If this is his plan, then nothing can stop it. You know, he's going to have to arrange time and space for us. He does say that in the course, you know, I will arrange time and space for the miracle worker. So we called on that prayer. And we were driving. We got down towards the motorway and there should have been a backlog of traffic and there wasn't. We got onto the motorway. Usually that stretch is pretty easy going. We carried on praying. I just had to really watch all of my projection onto myself, blaming myself. And then it went on to her that it was her fault. She should have woken up in time, you know, just really practicing letting go of all of my thoughts. Letting go of investment and outcome, you know, like the ego turns what is Jesus's plan suddenly into this threat almost. Like, this has got to happen. Otherwise, your life is over. Or, you know, there was fear that was coming up. So I was sitting there in prayer, just letting the emotions up and handing everything over. Letting go of America, letting go of David, letting go of how the path should look. We came down the motorway and there's a big round bend in the motorway. And as we came around, that's when you usually see the sea of red lights, you know, like a big ocean of red lights in front of you, of brake lights of all the cars. We came around the corner and there were no red lights. There was no traffic. We looked at each other like, what is going on? We came around the corner. We carried on. Still no traffic. We got to the Harbour Bridge. Usually the Harbour Bridge at least is packed with traffic. We got to the Harbour Bridge. By then it was feeling like the scene in the movie Vanilla Sky. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, there's no people in New York City, right?
That's the one. And he's just running through the streets like, what? Everyone's gone. Yeah. So we just looked at each other. We're in absolute just amazement at this point. We sail over the Harbour Bridge as if it's, you know, midday. We arrived at my appointment early. We didn't have time to stop and think about it. I just needed to get in there. So I went in for this appointment. And I went up to the counter. There were children in there. They were singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. They were singing happily and clapping their hands. It was like a kindergarten environment, not a U.S. visa immigration environment at all. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the counter, and she took my papers, and it was the most I was expecting a big interview. I'd be questioned, you know, had some nervousness about it. Nothing. She basically confirmed my identity, took my passport and said, great, we'll have that mailed to you within 5 days. And I said, with the visa? She said, yes, it'll have the visa in it. I was like, oh my God. I went out. I was dumbfounded. I was like, how did that just happen? And then later on, Jackie and I were just in such amazement, feeling exactly that you were saying, like, this is his plan. This is so obvious. This is, you know, beyond our control, and showing me without a doubt, like, this is a reference point to keep looking back on when the doubt comes up. Like, no, this is his plan. We found out later on that Tiger Woods was playing a match game in New Zealand that day, and most everyone had stayed home to watch it on television.
That's great. You know, the part of the story that I love, you know, just in narration, is that you go to get really the transition from one life to the next, from your life there to moving, you know, to the next place of your life. And that there are these children singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, because your work before had been with children. And it was like they were blessing your passage to the next step. And that's like, if I were reading this in a book, that's how I would see it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I liked that part.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
And so your mother Jackie, I notice you call her Jackie and not mom, and she's a course student. How is that? Would you call that a holy relationship, where you look at the relationship in kind of the way a Course in Miracles would describe it, instead of kind of this biological ego hierarchy of parent child? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, it was quite a journey. You know, it is for everyone with the course. And so there was a point where there was, many points along the way, but we consciously were going towards the healing and the letting go of the self-concept. And so that involved, you know, the mother concept and the daughter concept. And so whenever we could notice that came up, responsibility or concern for the other, more so than one of our other mighty companions, we were conscious of it and able to see it as specialness and pray with it and let it go and expose it to each other, you know. And so it was felt like such a gift to, you know, to have the closeness of that availability to be able to release the concepts together. So she came and joined in with the community for about 10 years. She was living in the community. She's since gone back to New Zealand. But there were many times where we had assignments to serve God together, to hold retreats and travel together. And it went through a lot of transformation of mother-daughter to companions, holy companions. And there was one point we were actually in Australia later on, waiting for my second visa to come through. We're based in Australia, and she had her heart stopped. And so I was taking her down to the hospital. And I remember we were in the car and we were in such gratitude for each other. This was, so it was a good, 4-5 years later, I think, having been like really on the journey of the course with the course together. And we were driving to the hospital, and had so much love and so much gratitude of, oh my God, we did it in this lifetime, because we felt that we'd had, you know, other times together, because there was such a deep bond. She said when I was born, she looked in my eyes and felt I was her teacher. And this time it was like, wow, we did it. We know who each other are in this lifetime. You're the Christ, you know? And that's our real relationship, and it cannot be lost this time. You know, it's, we did it. We did it after all the, felt like almost all the lifetimes of a story of losing the love of your life or being separated, or yeah, it felt like such a completion as we were driving down to the hospital of, you know, if there's one relationship in this lifetime where you really see it, you know, there's such full forgiveness into knowing who each other are, then yeah, there's this feeling of it is done. Oh, it is done. Oh. And then when we went down to the hospital, they did all of these tests on her and could find absolutely nothing. She was just let go of the doer a little more and go deeper into her mystical calling.
Yeah. So. Oh, gosh, that's great. I know there's a lot of listeners like, gosh, I wish I had a relationship like that with my parent, but for whatever reason, it's not there yet. Now, I know you've done some travel, I think, down in South America, I want to say. And did you have experiences down there where you kind of felt like, hey, I feel deeply foreign here, and it was kind of a growth opportunity in a way that you may not have picked, but it was a growth opportunity nonetheless?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's what it's all for, really, is for expansion and letting go of control again, by really getting into the giving, like getting into the giving, going beyond myself, you know, my personal self, into I'm here to serve. I'm here to serve no matter how that looks, and how, you know, however it's guided. So yes, there was very early on in the travels, David and I had gone down through doing a whole series of talks in Unity churches, where he was giving these talks in Unity churches. And I was going through a real unraveling of my self-concept, and I didn't know what to wear. I don't know if either of you have been through those phases before, but nothing
fit. Heaven.
Yeah.
I couldn't begin to imagine what you're talking about.
Yeah, like nothing fit anymore. I didn't fit myself anymore. You know, it was just, everything felt disoriented. And so I'd got some clothes that fit with Unity Churches, kind of button up tops, like right up to my neck, and skirts down towards my mid-calf range. And I finally felt comfortable in these Mary Poppins kind of outfits, is what David called them later on. And then we went down to Cali, Colombia, which is the liposuction plastic surgery capital, apparently, of the whole country. Yeah. And we were walking around, and there were like supermodels. The young women looked like supermodels just walking down the streets. And they're all in these teeny little skirts and these little tops with their platform shoes or their high heels. And here I was, you know, having come through these Unity churches in my Mary Poppins outfit. So David and I were doing a gathering, and at some point our host, who looked like one of the supermodels, she said, it looks like the men are distracted. They're trying to figure out if Kirsten has a shape under those clothes. And they're distracted by it. And then we were having a talk with the young women coming up, like teenage young girls. And so David looked at me, and you know, this is the kind of out-of-the-box healing I was going through. Like all my past learning would be like, what? I'm not going to dress in such a way. that is helpful for men. You know, all of my judgment came up around that. But David said, actually, I think we should go clothes shopping and we should let the Holy Spirit dress you, Kirsten. We're like Ken and Barbie dolls being used by the Holy Spirit. And so let's have fun. And so our host, she just lit up with joy. And David said, she can take us shopping. She was so happy. So took me shopping, got me these tank tops. And I did have some long pants that I was comfortable in, but I was wearing tank tops. And at one point I was wearing a tank top. I was like, I can't wear this at A Course in Miracles gathering. And Lily, her name was, she said, why? I said, it's just too revealing. It's too revealing. I can't do it. And she just had no concept of where my mind was coming from.
Yeah.
You know, that it was about what was appropriate even in A Course in Miracles gathering. She just could not understand. So somewhere in the middle, we met with what she felt really good with and what I felt really comfortable with. And I just had to be open-minded and let go of all of my thoughts. And then we turned up at the next gathering, and it was with all of these young girls and young women, and they had all of these questions for me, and I could feel it. It's like, wow, this is, I need to let off Kirsten on every level. No, this is not about me and what I think at all. And then I fell in love with the clothes. I just felt so happy about being popped out of, you know, this limiting concept that I'd just gotten myself into.
Popped out of Mary Poppins.
I did.
Yeah. You popped in, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. And so the questions about, is there a body underneath all these Mary Poppins clothes? Those went away so they could focus on the message more instead of on, you know, you're wearing these clothes that they don't understand.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. It's all about the message, the content, not the form. Like, that's what Jesus is trying to point us towards. It's about the content. What serves the content? What supports, you know, what is truly valuable? And let me take care of, you know, the rest. Yeah.
But there also is that bringing to life and, in a way, I mean, I just love that you use Mary Poppins because it was my favorite movie all time as a child. And one of the most extraordinary moments in that film was when she jumped into the painting and the chalk painting on the sidewalk and came into an animated life that was a whole nother way of her being and much more playful than herself in the rest of the movie. So I love that was kind of what happened to you. You just popped into this other way of being that instead of feeling so restricted, actually opened you up. And it wasn't about sexuality per se. It was just about image.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Oh my God, that's beautiful, Tim. That's exactly what it is. It was like Jesus just wants us to be happy and play and let all of the images and the symbols be used in such a light way. So it took a lot of loosening for me to not take it so seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And circling back to your old life as a teacher, was there any internal conflict you were having about letting that life go? Like, hey, I'm a teacher. This is my identity. I want to do these things. Was there like this, like a rope being pulled in two different directions? And you're like, I feel guidance to go over here, but I kind of have a craving this for my old life. Or were you like, I'm done?
I was done. Yeah. I felt like I'd reached the glass ceiling with, the education system. You know, it's part of the world's system, and I could feel that I wanted to offer so much more than I was allowed to within the role. And so I felt complete with it. And I also came to a point of seeing that even though my role looked like a lot of assessment and judgment, you know, of children's education plans and then working with them to beyond all of that, I came to seeing that children only learned when they felt loved through a true connection, that you really care about them, not what they learn, and through relationships. And so I felt like I maximized that, the learning that was there, and seeing that. So no, it was, and then just given all of these opportunities later on in a spiritual context to, for whatever skills and abilities I'd had to be transferred and be able to be used, like developing a ministerial program and a curriculum in that way. But all of the content is, you know, is awakening content. So.
And even what you just mentioned, I mean, you went from being a teacher to being a teacher.
Right.
You really didn't make a big jump in a certain way. And there you were with these teenagers, you know, teaching right then and there, a whole nother experience of how to be. So it doesn't seem like any of it disappeared. It seemed like it just gets used and enhanced.
Right. Yeah. 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 A lot of letting go, I would say. I remember at one point just sitting there, you know, we had the prayer at the beginning of our session here, and so often if I'm here to be truly helpful, and I do not have to worry about what to say or do, for, you know, he who sent me will do it through me. And I had to let go of the teacher concept. I had to really sit and let go of the planner and this identity that I'm the one who's going to provide the miracles for those coming to the course group, the course gathering, or I'm the one who needs to know the curriculum in advance. So it was more of a lot of letting go of the teacher concept, I think, and that part of my mind that believed that the goal is from learning something, like you learn and then you have the learning, whereas this whole direction is, it's the unlearning. It's about let go and let it come through from the Holy Spirit and receive the miracle. So,
yeah. Now, it sounds like you have kind of pretty clear intuitive guidance from the start here, or, you know, early in your journey. But, you know, for people that are listening and like, hey, I feel some intuitive guidance, but it's not very strong and it's not consistent. How do you recommend they get more in touch with that? Because I know it's not just yourself, but you're around a lot of people that are really focused on forgiveness and integrating the principles of Course in Miracles. So how do you go from that? Is it just letting go and trust, or how do you get to a higher volume or confidence in your intuitive guidance?
Yeah. Well, really learning to pay attention to how we feel is so key. You know, I felt before the journey, I was so out of touch with how I felt. There was a lot of pushing away of how I really felt, you know, to do what I felt I needed to do or do what I think I should do. And out of, you know, just the guilt in the mind, which made me feel responsible, you know, for the world. So it was a lot of tuning in to give the opportunity to be still and listen to how I felt. And so a lot of it felt like a path of negation, like rather than trying to focus on wanting to know what the guidance is, I would be noticing my impulse to do. And then I would pay attention to say, do I really feel to do that? Does that feel like it's with Jesus or with the Holy Spirit? Is it coming from love? Or is it the doer, you know, which is the push that pushed me, you know, off to have an accident in the first place? So I had a very strong reference point. So that I felt was key, of really paying attention to how do I feel and what am I being guided by? And then I felt so blessed that I knew every time I was reading this blue book, I was literally in direct contact with the Holy Spirit. and with Jesus. Like every word, every sentence, every page is a direct communication. And so when the ego would say, you don't hear guidance or there's a pressure to hear it, I could respond. Actually, I just spent 2 hours directly receiving the voice of God in my mind through the course. And so I would let go of the doubt and the concern and the pressure in that way. And then when I would listen to David give talks and his recordings, I could feel, oh, wow, this is the same, you know, it's from the same source. This is the same clarity. I'm hearing the same voice. So there was a lot of reinforcement, I think, in my mind around the Holy Spirit's voice, first and foremost. And then the question, what is this for? Which is in the rules for decision, is also just a second key that is so extremely helpful. Because if I really stopped and asked, what is it for? I'm about to do this truly, if I'm radically honest. What is my motivation? Do I have an agenda? Is it out of guilt? Am I about to do this to please somebody? To try to whatever, you know, purpose? Or again, does it feel like it's coming from my connection with Spirit?
Yeah.
So I would have those reference points of asking what it's for. And then if I wasn't sure of my motivation, I could again just stop and pause and let go of, if I thought I might have an egoic agenda, and then ask, just be willing to ask to be shown, what would you have me do? And yeah, and then I think joining with Mighty Companions is also very, very helpful. Like a lot of the clearing and really trusting that all of the forgiveness work that we're doing, and all of the time we're spending with this, the Holy Spirit's purpose, is washing our mind of the ego, which clears the debris away to be able to hear the guidance, like really trusting in that. And then that combined with asking or joining with Mighty Companions, like when Jesus says, if two are sincerely asking to hear, you know, you will hear, where two or more gathered, there I am. You know, you will hear the Holy Spirit. So that's been an extremely helpful support for me, knowing I could join with a Mighty Companion and together we could pray. And because if I had egoic investment in an outcome, then it's good to join with someone who's a little more objective. Yeah, to see if we would hear the same voice or have the same feeling.
You've been so deep into the practice of the Course, which is really lovely to see. Would you say that there is any larger forgiveness opportunities for you recently, or do they feel lighter and less as you go by?
Lighter, yeah.
Like the magnitude of what they feel like or perceived. You know, so many people, when they come with forgiveness stories here, there's some big story, and you had a big story, certainly, with your accident. Mm-hmm. But in the recent practice of it, has there been anything that you found particularly challenging that you have to hand over?
No, it seems lighter and lighter and less because of, I think, the trust in that we are in the Holy Spirit's plan. You know, Jesus is in charge of the plan of the atonement and we're in it. And so that is so solid in my heart in my soul that I don't doubt what plays out in the script anymore. I used to have so much concern for what would play out in the script, and now it's an acceptance. I mean, of course, there's moments where some doubt can come up, or I could notice some heaviness of like the belief in time, but because the guidance from the spirit is so clear, I'm told what my part is. Like, I know what my part is. And when I just solidly link in with my part, I can rest in that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think in having solid, mighty companions where you're so connected together, then there's something unshakable in that. You know, when you're together in a shared purpose, then your world can't be rocked the way that it could before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just practically on the level of preferences, you mentioned letting go of outcomes, and that I think is a wise message. When you have a preference come up, is it necessary to let go of the preference, or just not be attached to letting go of the idea that this one of these preferences is going to make me happy? I can pick chocolate, vanilla, or strawberry, but this preference is not going to make me happy. Like, I don't know if you're getting what I'm trying to say, but you have, mm-hmm. you have these preference choices all through the day, or things that it seems like you, these worldly outcomes or preferences you have to choose. How do you look at preferences without attachment?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I found, and this is really fun, is that my preferences have been used by Jesus and by the Holy Spirit to be able to communicate with me. So, like, I remember early on, I was on a road trip with a couple of friends, and we were going up to Canada, and we stopped at the gas station, and we filled the car with gas, and Jason used his card and he left his wallet on the roof of the car, and we drove off and we drove out of the gas station and miles up the road. And I heard, and then I felt like, I want a cappuccino. I thought, that's crazy. That's just ego. That's an ego preference. And then I heard it again, a cappuccino. Get a cappuccino. And we drove, I saw on the side of the freeway, there was like a Tim Hortons. And I was like, no, I kept pushing it away. And then finally, Jason said, I think we need to stop and buy a map. And we pulled over and he went to buy the map and realized his wallet was missing. It was back in the gas station, miles down the road. And I was blown away. I was like, oh my God, it totally shifted from me having guilt over my ego preferences to realizing, oh wow, I really have given everything over to Jesus. I have given it to the Spirit. And then his prompt to say, get a cappuccino was so that we could pull over soon and then notice the wallet was missing. So I found that more and more on the journey. Because I really don't have preferences in the same way that I did. It's more of an intuitive feeling of what's helpful and trusting that, you know, just trusting what feels intuitively helpful. And then if there are any thoughts or beliefs around it, I am happy to notice those and give them over. But more and more, it's like the Spirit wants things to just flow and be simple and really wants us to be happy, because it's really looking at the deeper beliefs, you know, of where the awakening of the mind happens, rather than being too concerned about, how to let go of attachment, you know, to the preferences.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this has been one big forgiveness story of letting go and asking to see the world differently, because every part of what you said is really a forgiveness. So normally I'd ask for one for a relationship or something like that, but it's been an hour and I feel like the whole thing's been a forgiveness story. I don't know if it's you, Tim.
Sure is.
But as it is, it's you're, that's where you're at. And it just seems like it's just everything is flowing. I do like to ask just the practical question for listeners. I don't know how much this happens for you because you seem like you're really in a state of flow. But when emotion comes up, ego thought comes in, it's very real. What do you practically do to get back into kind of centeredness with the spirit?
Mm-hmm. Well, the practice that I have used thousands of times is just rolling it back from perception to emotion and tracing it back to like thoughts and then core belief and then getting down to desire. So kind of tracing it all the way inward. So for example, I used to allow like that to take time, really journal with every step. Like, what am I perceiving that I'm feeling upset by? And what are the attack thoughts that are arising? And how do I feel? Let me really go through the emotion of how I feel, you know, and then see, okay, what is the core belief that this perception is showing me? You know, my belief in time or victimization or whatever the core belief is, and then come back to the desire, you know, what do I truly want? And of course, I want to let this go because I want the peace of God. So I would roll through that practice, giving myself an hour, you know, for hundreds of times, if not a thousand times throughout, you know, all these years. And then it's just got shorter and shorter to where it can be done so swiftly because the process is recognizable that it's almost, I can take a breath and roll through it and release it. So there was a moment I was on my way down here and I was traveling with a cat, Lucy, and we'd been traveling for many, many hours. It was a really early flight and we had a stop in Dallas and the plane was delayed leaving Dallas. And so we sat on the plane. I'd messaged ahead to David and Lisa to say, okay, there's a mechanical issue. It looks like it'll be 10 minutes. And then it was one of those 10 minutes, another 10 minutes, another 10 minutes, you know. And after 40 minutes, I started to feel heavy. This thought of time crept into my mind and I started to feel like, oh, we've been traveling for so many hours, you know, and I don't know if I can do this. And I just noticed these thoughts. And then I noticed my mind. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? And just in a breath, I could just completely let that go. And the decision for God, the decision for heaven, heaven is a decision I must make. It was made. I just almost watched my mind making this decision. And I felt so much joy and light just whoosh up through my whole being. And then I listened and this couple beside me, this Mexican couple had been talking and kind of happy. And they just started to laugh louder and louder. And there was a mother in front, this row in front, and with her friend, they started to talk and laugh louder and louder and louder. Honestly, the whole plane was up. Everyone was in joyful conversation and laughter. And the couple next to me, they were laughing so much that they were shaking my seat. it was like one of those instant, holy incident that everyone was included in. And I called David and Lisa and they said, oh my God, I can't believe you just called. We were just thinking of you. And I said, yeah, I'll let you know when the plane starts rolling. I hung up again and then the pilot came over, you know, the announcement and said, good news, we're on our way. We were off. So,
yeah. And for people listening, some people might say, oh, this is coincidence. But you're saying this literally mirrored your mind. Your change of mind was mirrored in the world you saw in your perception.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And when this happens over and over and over again, where you see the simultaneity of it's my perception, it's my mind, you know, then it's just, you're convinced that there is no inner and outer, that it's, yeah, it's really my own inside job of how, of what world do I want to perceive, you know, really.
Well, I know you have guidance on your preferences, so I'm going to see if you have any intuitive guidance on this preference question. What is your favorite comfort food, Kirsten?
I would have to say my favorite comfort food is prayer.
No, not anything that, anything that accompanies that prayer. How about chocolate?
Got to get a little into the world of form here.
Yeah, you got to jump in. You got to go. You have a toe into duality with us. Yep.
I've never rejected something, but in this time we have to. It's for Matt, really.
Oh, well, I do love chocolate, and we talked about avocados and papayas.
Yes.
And I love papaya and I love avocados. So yes, those are three of my foods that I just love.
Chocolate, avocado, papaya. Yum.
You know, down there in Mexico, they put this little tajin, like, what would you call that? Like a, it's like a pepper, it's like a shake that you put on top of the papaya, and it is so good. I miss that. It adds like this zestiness to papaya that I sometimes travel with these little tajines. When I go down there, I get the little tajin and just bring it with me because it's just so good.
If you I love that.
You know, do you do that too, Tam?
Okay. I have it up here.
Oh, good. Good. I love that. Yeah. Well, Kirsten, thanks for sticking to your prayer as your comfort food. but now I'm thinking, what the heck is avocado? Is that considered a fruit or is that a...
Oh, don't go there.
Okay. That's a controversial thing, right?
Yeah, totally. Forgiveness opportunity right there.
Well, Kirsten, thanks so much for coming on Miracle Voices and sharing your miracle voice. Is there anywhere we can point listeners who want to connect with you online?
I think on Facebook is an easy way. Yeah, just on Facebook, Kirsten Buxton, or YouTube. And also, yeah, that's a good way to connect. And if anyone wants to hear more of those miracle stories, there's a book that I wrote that is all of those miracle stories and more. That's really helpful, practical forgiveness. So just by Googling my name, then that should show up.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah. Well, thanks again, Kirsten, and have fun down there in Mexico. Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."